Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, you're stuck with me. We're talking about cars. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. We have five lines available, and you're welcome to call us, and we can talk about your car, or we can settle an argument between you and your son, or you and your wife, or anybody. We're pretty good at that. I'm not necessarily a Judge Judy, but I'll do my best. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete auto repair. Chuck Nide opened it up about 1982, and Derek, his son, is now there. They do a good job. They don't sell you unnecessary parts or repair. So if you're looking for a great shop in Sun City, may I recommend Automotive Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And, oh, got a frog in my throat because we already have a caller, Gil. I'm ready.
Don't be surprised, Mark.
Yeah.
Say hello to Alex.
Alex, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
So I have a 95 Camry. I'm sure you may recognize me by now because I call in quite a bit. But my 95 Camry, now the threading on the oil pan plug is stripped, and I've tried putting one of the Eco Plug oversized drain plugs in there, and I didn't know that there were better options when I did that. So I'm just wondering, I know about the thread inserts, and I know about, you know, re-threading it. What are my options now that I've already put that oversized plug in there?
Pretty limited, but they make a rubber plug with a special tool, and it's kind of like a syringe-looking thing, so you push on it, and it takes the nose of the rubber plug and elongates it. Then you stick it in there, and then you pull out the syringe kind of thing, and it holds pretty tight. That's what I'd do. You have to clean up the hole where you made the mess, because we don't want the metal slivers contaminating the rubber plug. And then, obviously, you have to keep track of the tool in order to take it on or off. Your other option is to go in there and have somebody use... Did you use the largest drain plug, the self-threading drain plug that was available?
It was actually one that's shaped like a cone.
Okay. Okay, well, I don't use those. And hopefully, see, if it's a cone, I envision this cone as starting kind of small and going to the maximum diameter.
Yeah.
Okay, and if you already took it to the maximum diameter, you don't have much choices. You either find one of those rubber plugs I was talking about, or you replace the oil pan.
What is a rubber plug tool called?
Well, I don't know what the tool's called. It looks like the nipple on a baby bottle. And you have this tool that you push into the hole, and that takes the nipple part and makes it really narrow. You stick that in the oil pan drain plug hole, and then when you pull the tool out, the nipple comes back and it flattens out, so you're kind of sandwiching the hole. So, you know, get on the internet and just look around, and if you find something that's rubber, then that's the kind of one that I think you should look at. It would have been a lot better off if you would have got help on the front side of this, but then again, you got to dance with the girl that got you here, so that's all I can offer you. Sorry, Alex. Good luck to you. That's another example. Alex is kind of an example, but let me read you one of the worst ones I've had in a long time. This is from a listener that sends me an email. Three mechanics, one a Chevy truck engine fleet mechanic. So he's got three mechanics, and one of them is the Chevy truck fleet mechanic. Cannot fix my problem. They cannot get the check engine light to go off after spending $2,000 in labor and parts so I can pass emissions legally. $2,000. You folks can go out there and make that mistake all you want, because when you come into my shop, you're not getting any kind of a deal. You can give me your sob story and tell me that you got $2,000 out there, and I don't care. Those are lessons we all learn in life. I'm not telling you that you're never going to fix your own car, because some of you are, and some of you are going to thump your chest and say you are, and that's okay with me. But when you bring us a mess, and then you want us to wave our magic wand and fix your mess, and at the same time, you want us to financially participate in the repair because you're underneath the big trucks, tires, and wheels. It's, you know, it's not going to happen in 99% of the shops I know, because this is almost an everyday deal. Almost. $2,000. We could have... Oh, boy. It's just... I don't know. It's kind of sad. I'm going to pull that back up and read you the rest of it, because it kind of explains it better. He's replaced the mass airflow. Now, keep in mind, this is a check engine light, so I don't really know where it's at, but I've said before, it can be an O2 sensor light, but it doesn't mean the O2 sensor is bad. It can mean a vacuum leak upstream. It could be an EGR valve that's stuck open because the computer can't tell where the lean condition is coming from. All it knows is that the oxygen sensor is screaming lean. So all of you go to the auto parts store where the three-whiskered kid lives, and you say, what's the code? And then the three-whiskered kid comes up with the idea of, let's go ahead and replace a bunch of parts that could or could not be. And at the end of the day, it was a vacuum leak that was somebody should have plugged in the hose, and you would have been in and out of most shops. We had to fix that in the front parking lot for $30. Anyway, mass airflow sensor, O2 sensor, he's replaced the entire fuse box. The fuel pump, the fuel relay, and all the spark plugs and the wires. And here's the problem. When you have an HC problem, you have the incomplete combustion of the fuel. So you got some gasoline molecules and gasoline molecules that have been burnt. A CO problem is rich. You got so much fuel going into the engine that a huge amount of it is coming out the tailpipe. The difference between hydrocarbons and the difference with carbon monoxide has to do with what does the fuel look like coming out of the tailpipe. Hydrocarbons, there's a little bit of fuel and a little bit of carbon monoxide, but the temperatures are real high. Where the CO failure is just, in an exaggerated state, it's got raw fuel running out of the tailpipe. So he replaced the mass airflow sensor, the O2 sensor, the entire fuse box. So the question to me is, Mark, have you ever replaced the entire fuse box on a car? Yes, I have. Tell me about it. It's the Ford truck. There's a certain year spread of Ford truck that have the fuse box underneath the left, on top of the left driver's foot, and the windshield leaks and runs water into the fuse box. And by the time anybody really starts looking around, it looks like one big ball of green moss. And there's really, you can take it apart and sand it and use all the cleaner you want, and you're never going to get it. He replaced the fuel pump, the fuel relay, and the plugs and the wires. So we're working on both a CO failure and an HC failure, according to him. Because he's dancing between the fuel and the ignition systems. And fuel is one thing and ignition system is the other. Spark and fuel are different. So... And then this is the part I like. One is the Chevy truck engine fleet mechanic, and nobody can fix the problem. It doesn't make any difference what they say in front of you. Their actions will tell you all you need to know. So this is a day in the life of Mark Salem. Here's another example. A young man whose father's done business with us forever. His dad calls me and he says, we've got this problem. He's got an O2 sensor, and it just won't reset the light. And so we've replaced it a couple times. We've tried different brands and stuff like this. This is the same song I hear every day, but this dad is so much bigger than me, so much tougher than me, that I didn't tease him. Besides, he's a cop. So he says, can my son bring his car in? And I said, sure. So he brings his car in, and I'm exaggerating here, but you're going to get my point. What's wrong is that this car, and when you talk about versions of cars, we go back to Fred Flintstone, where we carved pictures in a rock, all the way up to where we're at today with the internet. So you have this wide range of expertise, of moving forward, of, you know, engine controls that has gone from Fred Flintstone with steel tires all the way up to Microsoft and Windows and everything else, Apple. So he brings it in, and he's very frustrated. And admittedly so. That's something that happens in every shop every day. So we assign, I mean, we really have a lot of good technicians, but we assign it to Eddie. And Eddie says, come on out here, young man. He says, we're going to do this together. So Eddie looks over. There's a whole bunch of new parts on this vehicle. He does a little research, and he finds out that this 2004 Toyota, when you replace this particular component, I'm pretty sure it was an oxygen sensor, that you have to relearn. So the computer has to relearn some parameters. So I'm telling you this tongue-in-cheek. So he gets the kid and he goes, I found the relearn process. So you get in the car and I'll tell you what to do. Okay, turn the key on and off 2 times. Now open and close the door. Now honk the horn 2 times. I'm going to open and slam the hood. I'm going to wave a dead chicken around my head and cluck like a rooster. Then we're going to wait 6 seconds. And we're going to open and close both front doors, and then the computer knows that it has to relearn that parameter. You think I'm kidding you. Forget the part about the dead chicken. There's all kinds of weird stuff that we have to do, especially on the older cars. Now, some of the newer cars, many of the newer cars, if not all the newer cars in the last 3 or 4 years, they do a relearn themselves. So it's already programmed in the car. So you put in a new part. Let's put in a mass airflow sensor. The computer sees different readings, so it begins to monitor the action, and the computer will kind of go, hey, let's make it rich and see if it can see that, or let's add air, or let's do this, or let's do that. Oh, yep, it can see it. Well, we know the other one couldn't. So it eliminates the historical data of that code, and it doesn't come back. Anyway, the short story about the young man is he was truly just baffled. He was truly beyond his capability, his father's capability, and everybody that they know. We didn't charge him anything, and here's why. Because his father's done business with us for 25 years. And so this young man just needed some help. It didn't take us long. We just simply found the relearn situation or the relearn process, and we did it, and he watched us. And so he got a lesson about, how much money did you spend? How many times did you change the O2 sensor? How many times did you get on the internet? How many times did some guy on Google tell you that you do this and this is, and you have to buy an OEM one? You can't buy an aftermarket one. You have to buy one with a pink lead, not a red lead. And you have to use, don't use dielectric on it, but you have to use some kind of a thread sealer, or don't use a thread sealer. There's all this stuff on the internet, and he had done a lot of it already. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, we'll be back. So, it's 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars, and you're putting up with my antics, and frankly, I'm sorry for that. Sometimes my and this is, I don't remember the lady's name, but this is for her. She called last week. It just wads up my panties. And I'm not mad at anybody. It's just, it happens all the time. In our industry, what's important in our industry is, if I have to give you my resume before you have trust in me, that's a bad deal. Everybody has a beautiful resume. Everybody has been working on Chevrolet since they were 8.5 years old, and my dad was this, and my brother was this, and all that stuff. It's not important. It's not important. It's showing you, not talking about it. So it's one of those, how sure are you going to be able to fix this? Give me some parameters on the diagnostic time. Okay. And what happens if you don't find it? I'm not interested in paying for guesses. So it's not like you're going to put this on and that didn't work, and then you're going to put this on and pretty soon I have 4 new parts, and you say, well, I can't take them out and give them back to the parts room, parts department. So that's kind of what happens. Strictly Diesel, you don't have to worry about that. Nate at Strictly Diesel is a good guy. He's not going to pretend like he's a mechanic. I'm telling you, he's as good as they get when it comes to diesels. He's been around a very long time. I've sent a lot of problems to him. He's up north, and he's taking care of every one of them. So if you're looking for a good diesel shop, then may I suggest, boy, howdy, I'm having a tough time. I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road, North Phoenix, and that's Nate at Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Joe, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Well, you can help me, I'm sure. I've got a couple of mid-60s Fords that I'm having a little bit of a heating problem on one, I think, but I'm not exactly sure where to look. I've got two Mustangs, one's a 65, one's a 66, and the 66 seems to run hotter than the 65, which isn't all that unusual. But my question is, I've got one of these thermal thermometers, and I'm taking the water coming out about where the thermostat is on the hose there, and then I'm doing it at the radiator on top and then at the radiator on bottom. What kind of a temperature split do you think you would want to see on that?
Well, let's back the train up a little bit. Where is the gauge running on each one of these cars?
They're on the intake manifold.
No, no. Where's the gauge on the dashboard say?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
The 65 usually runs about 5/8, and this the 66 runs 3/4 to almost all the way to the edge of the bracket when it gets completely warm.
Okay, that's called the goalpost. Okay, you're saying on the right side of the goalpost. Now, does it make any difference if these cars are driving around the city or on the freeway? Does one environment create a different reading on the gauge?
The city will bring them up just a little bit. Out on the highway, they seem to do okay. They do all right. It doesn't overheat. But like I said, the 66 is always warmer, and it's always closer to the edge of the goalpost. With the 65 in town, it will run a little bit higher than it does out on the road. Same with the 66.
None of this means anything because you're giving me parameters that my listeners can't understand, and you say it runs hotter. But we're in specifics now. So what I hear you saying is that one or both of them runs obviously hotter based on the reading on the gauge around the city than it does on the freeway. And when it's on the freeway, the needle is in an acceptable range for you.
It is. I just have a little worried when it gets closer to the one goalpost on the 66. On the 65, yes, it's always right in there, in the middle.
Okay. The gauge is between half and a tad past 3/4 is fine. But if you have a problem and it's more obvious when you're driving around town, then you have an airflow problem across the radiator.
Okay.
So they have air conditioning?
Yes, they both do.
Okay. Well, that's a condenser in front of the radiator, and it gets plugged up with trash and stuff like that. So, to answer your question, do you have 180 thermostats in that?
I do. Well, they're 172s, I believe.
Okay. I would have never done that, but that's okay. If you get a temperature gun from, like, Harbor Freight, so you gun the
thermostat. I do have one.
Okay.
I do.
Okay. You gun the top thermostat housing. Exactly what reading did you get?
I got, and the top thermostat, I got 170.
Okay, well, that's the thermostat opening up, so we're good there. What'd you get on the lower hose?
I got 122.
Okay, well, you're knocking 50 degrees off.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
And so
all of a sudden now we're chasing our tail because you want to use the gauge and what you think the gauge is saying. And I'm saying to you, the cooling system's handling 50 degrees, and that's better than most any car that's been made in the last 15 years. So are you sure you have the right temperature sender in the intake?
Well, I've had the car for 50 years, and it's the same one that's been in there, so I think so, yes.
Did you buy the car new?
No, it's been in our family since 1970. We did not buy the car new. It was 4 years old.
Well, I think if you wanted to... If you want to spend money, then go buy a temperature sender for a gauge.
Okay.
For each one of the cars, and it might vary. Are they both six cylinders? Are they both V8s? What are they?
They're both V8s, 289.
Okay. But you're going to go by application and year and order a temp sensor and put it on. But again, half to slightly past 3/4, maybe a needle width away from the right side goalpost would be something that wouldn't bother me at all. And if I hopped on the freeway and it came down even between the goalpost and the middle mark, I'd be happy. But your radiator's not plugged up. You're knocking 50 degrees off there. If the radiator's plugged up, the water would...
Yeah.
the radiator plugs up, the water runs through a lot faster. So if we're taking half the radiator and plugging it with calcium, then we start running all this water coolant through the other half. It runs through the radiator so fast because it's got so much pressure behind it, it doesn't have a chance to drop the heat off.
Okay.
So you can do whatever you want, but obviously the radiator's working.
2 minutes.
And it hasn't blown anything on the ground. I've paid attention that you haven't said that I park it and it just pees green coolant all over the place.
No, it doesn't do that, no.
Okay. But the most important thing is there's a difference between city and highway. And that's verified by your 170. Now, there's a lot of old timers are going to tell you, oh, take the radiator or the thermostat out, or they're going to say, take the thermostat out and just cut the hoops off of it and let's use it as a restrictor. You can do all that. It's not going to do you a bit of good, and that's not what that motor wants. And when you take away the cooling system and you start running it from a quarter to a half, all you're doing is building up a whole bunch of water in the oil, and you don't even know it. And that's going to cause you damage down the road. So, I don't know. Your thermostat readings are good. Your upper and lower hose is good. You don't have a coolant leak. Every time you pull the cap off, when it's cold, I bet it's full. You have a 50-50 mix of coolant.
1 minute.
And you didn't,
I do.
And you didn't use 100% coolant because that causes what? The only thing I can think of, and you don't have a fan clutch on either one of those cars, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Then the fan clutch could easily be the problem because when it's driving around the city, it's not locking up, which sucks air through the radiator. But on the freeway, we don't care about the fan clutch because you're in your Mustang, you can barely do 50 miles an hour anyway, and of course I'm teasing you. But when you go through the road at 50 miles an hour, we're pushing so much air across the radiator that we don't need the fan clutch. So,
all right.
If you want to guess, sensors or fan clutches, that would be the one. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Gil answers them. There's five. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. Gil's my engineer. He's the one that gets in trouble when I act ornery, and so I intend to get him as much trouble today as I can. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And this is kind of a give and take. You're making model. I'm suffering an oil leak. And then I say, well, where's the oil leak? Front, center, rear? Does it leak when it's running? Does it not leak when it's running? Is it dark brown or black? Or is it pink? Or is it green? Or is it yellow? That's the kind of stuff we have, is that kind of give and take. Because if I can ask you questions, then I can get a whole lot closer to where you were at. And then I can understand better to guide you the very best I can. It's not important that I give you my resume, but I will tell you this. I've been an ASE Master Technician for more than 20 years. I've passed all the automotive tests every 5 years for more than 20 years. I'm now called Emeritus, which means I'm retired. I don't have to take the test again. And that just means I've proved that I know what I'm doing. My first job was at a gas station. It's a Shell gas station. It was a Shell gas station at Broadway and Priest in Tempe. I wasn't even old enough to drive a car. But my boss, Ken Vivian, who's passed away since then, taught me a lot about cars. And he let me, you know, change oils, fix tires, do all that stuff, rotate tires, look at the brakes. So I learned a lot from him, but in reality, I've been in that kind of an environment since 1970. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa has been around since 1970 as well. Brian and Thelma are good people. They have ASE certified technicians. They're going to be there for you if you have a problem, and more than important, they're going to be around if you have a problem that they need to readdress. All you have to do is meet Brian and Thelma and understand why I think they're probably, without a doubt, the best shop in Mesa. And it's the only shop that I can hang my name to. So if you live in Mesa and you're looking for a good repair shop, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Okay, Gil, who we got?
We have Mike.
Mike, good morning.
Hey, Joe, Mark. Love your show.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a 99 Ford F-250. Diesel 7.3.
Okay.
It's got about 300,000 on it. And me and my son, we heard some squealing under the motor for the last couple months, and we decided to go look at it. We changed it. We thought it was the power steering pump. So we went ahead and changed out the power steering pump, put a new belt on too, serpentine belt. And I got the pump from O'Reilly's, put it on, and it was making a squealing noise still right after we put it on. So I talked to O'Reilly's again. They say, well, bring it back. Well, it turns to find out they told me to put par steering fluid in this unit, and it's supposed to take transmission fluid.
This is for Ford.
Same thing. Well, so anyway, well, she says, well, maybe it's the pump. This is the manager.
Okay,
stop.
Because I don't care what O'Reilly said. Can I ask some questions? Tell me, when you start this up first thing in the morning, is the squeal there?
No.
Okay, good. When you start it up in the morning and you rev the motor, would the squeal raise its ugly head then?
When I turn the wheel, it does, yes.
Okay.
Only when I give it a little RPMs.
Okay. Why don't we just spray some garden hose water on the belt and see what happens?
On the belt. Well, we changed the belt. Belt's new.
Okay. All right. Well, this is one of those conversations where I say this and you say you've done this. There's only two parts of the pump. There's the pump and the two lines, and they're not going to make a squealing noise, and the belt. My suggestion is take a garden hose and hose the whole thing down. Because do you have an idler pulley, or is the pump the only one on the belt?
No, there's an idler pulley. It was also replaced.
Okay. I don't know what to tell you. It's kind of one of those things that you've replaced everything, but you still have the problem. But the problem is I'm working off of your eyeballs, and I'm pretty sure that I shouldn't be working off your eyeballs. So if you take the belt off, does it go away?
Well, the belt, it's all one belt, so...
Then wait a minute. I asked you if it's loaded in anything else, and you said an idler pulley, but that's not true. The alternator and the water pump and the air conditioning compressor, if it's got a serpentine belt, it's driving all of those, right?
Yes, yeah. Okay. We haven't taken that off.
Okay.
No, we haven't done that.
What's the possibility that you have something else squealing and you're working on the power steering pump, and I don't agree that the person that told you that you need special power steering fluid is telling you the truth, but that's okay. But it's probably something other than what you're talking about.
Well, when the truck's idling and you go to turn, now a little more information. The truck has a lift on it. It has 35-inch
tires. None of that makes any difference.
That's what I thought. Okay. But any time we would hear the squealing is when you give it a little bit RPMs and you turn the steering wheel. It sounds like the power steering pump.
Okay,
like
that's not struggling. True. That's not true. So you're telling me that when you turn the steering wheel and we load the pump, that just because that causes a squeal, then it must be the power steering pump. That's just not true. When you load the belt, then you're loading the belt. And so if anything else is acting up, it could ease it again. A water hose will help you figure this out. But it has nothing to do with what you're talking about. It has everything to do with just common sense. This could be once we load the alternator, it's squealing. Once we load the air conditioning compressor, the belt is squealing. If you want to change all that stuff, that's fine. This diagnostic may cost you $35 to $50 at a shop, and you've probably spent a lot more money and time than that's been. But the power steering, if you would have had a squeal and you would have wet that power steering pump down, the pulley with the garden hose, and then you turn it back and forth and the squeal goes away, then we'd be working on that part. But you're not even to first base. But I got to run 10:40. It's 40 minutes after 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I just got a funny text from a friend of mine who owns a repair shop. He says, with respect to the caller that had a belt squeal and that situation. And he's laughing, and we're laughing together, and we're not laughing in a mean way. He says, what we know right now is it's not the power steering pump, it's not the belt, and it's not the idler pulley. We still don't know what it is. But the good about this exercise is we know what it isn't, but we still don't know what it is. I've never heard that before, and I thought it was funny. But anyway, I got to tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. Been around since 1968. Phil and his guys are really, really good at diagnosing problems and fixing leaks. if it's an intermittent problem, that makes it a little tougher. He reminds me. But at the same time, if there can be give and take, when does it do it? Hot or cold, fast or slow, and what gear it is. That's important. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, we call it ATE, is located at 40th Street in Washington. Like I said, been around a while. Tony, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yes, good morning. I have an 04 Chevy pickup, 5.3. It's got a little over 100,000. And I switched over to this oil for cars that are 75,000 miles or over.
Yes, sir.
What's what do they have? What kind of ingredients do they have in there that will do the engine any good after 75,000? I'm just curious.
Nothing.
Not a thing. Huh?
Not a thing. Now let me explain. I'm an oil expert. I get to testify in court about what oil is and what it does and what it doesn't do. When we build a quart of oil, I want you to picture a quart of Mother Nature oil that has been refined and cleaned up. When we add detergent and viscosity improvers, there's about four or five chemicals, and I just can't think of them because my mind is mush right now. As we add these chemicals to make that quart of oil a perfect quart of oil, we are adding some of these additives a pin drop at a time. Some of them might be a complete blop of out of a, you know, a little squeeze thing. We're making this oil, and it's very, very specific. Detergent, and this kind of thought process is, oh, there's a lot more detergent. Detergent in an engine oil has nothing to do with scrubbing bubbles. Detergent says that as you park it at night, there's this little piece of carbon and in the oil. So I want you to picture 6 inches of oil in your oil pan, and there's this little piece of carbon at three inches. The next time you start that car up, that little piece of carbon has not fallen to the bottom of the oil pan. It's held in suspension by this detergent. Oh. So the next time that drop of oil goes through the filter grabs that little carbon and hangs on to it. But there's no such thing as scrubbing bubbles. So it's I'm telling you unequivocally, this is a marketing ploy. And it's the same reason why, you know, this pan is good, but this one's better. And this milk is good, and that one's better. And all the other things that you see on TV with beer and cars and tires, it's just a marketing. And so I wouldn't spend a dime more than whatever you used. Whatever oil you used that got you this far is what I'd be using now. And I know you're spending extra for the old car oil.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. I had a hunch that that might be a promotional scheme of some kind. But I use a full synthetic because of the heat down here. So.
Okay.
But I appreciate you letting me know all about that.
Okay, but wait just a second, Tony. Full synthetic has detergent, but it's this other oil that you're using without naming the brand. Do you know if it's a conventional or a blend or a full synthetic?
No, a full synthetic. Well, it's a Valvoline.
Okay, so it's a full synthetic.
Full synthetic Valvoline.
Okay, and it's for older cars.
And it says 70 for cars over 75,000 miles.
Okay, now the synthetic is a 0-20. And there isn't a car in the world that was made, I mean, in the last 5, 6, 7 years, we came out with 0-20. So that eliminates all those cars behind there that oil doesn't apply because it's a different weight and a different everything. So if you're using, now, does it say to change the oil any more often than your synthetic without the fancy?
No.
Okay. How often are you changing the synthetic?
Okay, I'm going to take your advice from a previous program that you had that I should go longer. I used to change it every 3,000 miles.
Oh, I'd love for you to be my customer. But yes, I promise you.
I might just do that.
I promise you your synthetic will go 10,000 miles. And if you drive 5,000 miles a year, I want you to do it once a year. If you drive 10,000 miles a year, I want you to do it in April before the summer starts. But I've got customers in Ahwatukee that only drive 2,000 miles a year. I put the cheapest blended oil I can put in there, and I call them in for an oil change once a year. I'm not going to put the synthetic in there because that's an overkill. And they're only using the car 2,000 miles a year, so I'm going to protect them, but I'm going to cut their oil change costs a lot. So,
oh, okay.
Okay, well, Tony?
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Tony. Nick, you're up next.
Mark, I got an 06 Chevy Colorado with a little over 759,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And just to let you know, I recently had drum, shoes, wheel cylinders replaced in the back. So they did a bleed and everything. Okay, so I'm driving down the freeway about an hour ago, and it sounded like I was going in those grooves on the side of the freeway.
Okay.
Okay, so I pulled over, checked. There's all kinds of air in all the tires. Everything is fine. Started to go on the shoulder, and the car wanted to have a brake applied and dip and turn to the left. So I went up a little bit farther, got into a gore point, got out, checked underneath. I didn't really see anything. The ABS light came on, so I drove back and forth in the gore point, hitting the brakes, and then it stopped doing that. But I left the truck there, and the ABS light went out.
Okay.
Any ideas?
No, there's nothing there. I mean, you're no different than when you got out. I mean, you want me to diagnose your car because the ABS light is off.
I just want to know if you think it would be safe to drive it on surface streets 10 miles home.
Okay. Did somebody else do the brakes, or did you do the brakes?
It was done at a brake shop.
Why don't you go back there?
It's in Tucson.
Oh. Well, do they have another, is it a franchise one where they have something in Phoenix?
Yeah, okay. They do. Yeah.
Okay. My best advice to you, first of all, this vibration, and all you told me that was really important is that when you apply the brakes, sometimes it changes it. If you wanted to look...
Well, this was like if I was driving on the freeway. You know, they have those grooves in the side of the freeway in case you're going off the freeway. Rumble strips. That's what it felt like I was driving over.
Okay,
with
I understand
strips.
That. I understand
okay.
that.
Okay.
I understand
okay.
that. I would think the first thing you'd want to do is just check to see if they put all the lug nuts on tight. That would cause an ABS light to come on, and that's going to cause the tire to wobble. But the next best thing is you've got your receipt, you call the 1-800 number, they're going to send you to a brake shop, and it's their problem to find. It's theirs. They have to go through and check everything that's been done. They've got to check the wheel bearing tension. They've got to check the lug nut tension. They've got to make sure that the calipers are not dragging the inside pad. They've got to make sure that the slides and all the hardware that keeps the caliper slide left, slide right, all of that is okay. This isn't your problem. This is theirs. They should pay the tow bill as well. So you might call the local place and say, hey, I've had my brakes done in Tucson, and I've got this problem, and I'm kind of scared to drive it because it's making noises and doing things that really make me uncomfortable. So I'm going to have it towed to you rather than back to Tucson. And do you have a tow truck that you want me to use? That's exactly how I'd say it. So
okay.
I don't know what it is, but it's going to – I think you'll agree it's related to the work they just did.
Yeah, well, I've probably put on 3,000 miles in the last week, a little over a week when they did it.
Okay.
So it was perfectly fine up until just like today, like an hour ago.
Okay. Well, that's all fine and dandy, but that information is not valuable until we know what it is, and then we can kind of explain that. It could be something different.
Okay.
Then the explanation is, well, it was 3,000 miles later. Is this a vibration that shakes the car? Other than the rumble strip, is this a vibration that shakes the car?
No, I didn't have the vibration or anything up until rumble strip, pulled over, started to drive on the shoulder, the car would dip and turn to the left like it was a front caliper or something engaging.
Okay.
Brake light came on, ABS light came on, stopped.
Okay, wait a minute.
10 minutes later, I just was driving. Okay.
Wait a minute. Brake, red brake, and yellow ABS light on?
Just ABS.
Okay. And it's yellow, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It still could be a wheel bearing. It could be a caliper that's hung up. It could have tossed one of the pads. There's just a whole lot that could have been done on the left front. But I do like what you said, is when I apply the brakes, it wants to go hard left, and that means that the left front is the focus area. So no one will know what it is until they get it apart. But I'm pretty sure that it's more likely than not that this is going to be related to your brake job 3,000 miles ago.
Okay. Good enough. Thanks, Mark. Have a good day.
Okay. And folks, even if it was my own shop, I'd say the same thing. It's more than likely related to the work that we did. We're not without fault. My guys make a mistake every 10 years. It's not true. They make a couple of mistakes a year, and we recognize them. It's not something you can hide from. The worst-case scenario is the customer pulls a car out, takes it someplace else, and then calls the Attorney General's office because you're committing fraud. So it's you're better off just to find it and fix it. If it's not yours, take a bunch of pictures, get the customer to come back in and say, look, the lower control arm came loose. We didn't do any suspension work. See there? It's completely – now let's look at the other side. Oh, see how that one's mounted? It's got rubber bushings on each end with a couple big washers and nuts. Well, on this side, look, it's broken. So this has nothing to do with our brakes. It has everything to do with this connection that went bad and caused the problem. So that's one side. But a show and tell is important. In that scenario, they have to show you. They have to, and you always can compare to the other side of the car. So if they say this is not the problem, then let's look at the other side of the car. Or this is a problem. Show me the its sister component on the other side of the car. So that's kind of the way it is. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. There's other shops in the valley that Mark Salem says are good shops, and Blackwell Automotive at Greenway and 40th Street is one of them. Tom's a good guy. He knows how to work on cars. He does hot rods all the way to newer model cars. He's kind of like a dictator, and I know how that feels, because he insists that the staff follow normal, accepted protocols. Get the information. Get as much information as the customer. Ask them questions. The technician's involved in that. The technician verifies the concern. He goes out and sees it happen, makes it happen, feels it happen. Then the technician determines what the cause of that is. Then the technician gets the labor, submits the paperwork to the parts department. The labor and the parts come together. The service writer adds sales tax, shop supplies, environmental charges. Service writer says to the tech, "You better be sure." And the tech says, "I'm sure." So then they sell it to the customer. The technician fixes the car. What can't happen is the technician come back in and say, "You know what? That fixed the vibration, but we've got a broken shock on the back end, and we need to do that." Well, of course, you and I, both of us know that he missed it. Both of us know that he messed up. Both of us know that that vibration's still there. So we have to unwind this deal, which means, in most shops, the brake job is free. We sell him one shock and send him out the door. The technician's future with our company will depend on how many times this has happened and how long he's been with us. So if one of my 10-year veterans makes a mistake, okay, we'll just take care of it. We'll make it right. We'll unwind the whole thing. But one thing's for sure is Mark Salem's not going to pay you for that big old brake job because it didn't fix the car. So, therefore, you're going to work for that 2 hours for free. But most of the time, 99% of the time, the technicians knows what's going on. 602-508-0960. We've got five lines open, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes. So you're welcome to wait or welcome to call in. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem, and this is 960 The Patriot, 960 AM. We'll be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about car and car repair questions and problems. And one of the best diagnostic shops in town, certainly in the top 10 or 20 of them, is Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. They've been around since 1967. Bob works the shop. His wife, Ellen, handles the front counter in the lobby. Between the two of them, they know a significant amount of information that starts with just discussing the symptoms. What do you see? What do you feel? And what's not a part of that normal conversation is what the people on Google and on the Internet say it is. They're guessing based on whatever. Nevertheless, for auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, and when you honk the horn on the right side passenger door opens up. Those are the things that Larry Harkers can work on. 38th Avenue and Indian School, it's a good place to go if you're in that area. Let's go to David. David, good morning.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
You know, I have a bug in my throat, but I'm going to be fine. Thank you for asking.
So I've been listening to you for years, mostly because I love your music, but I did hear you say something earlier that threw me for a loop here. When you said that the car is lunging, that the previous guy with the brake problem, you said the car is lunging to the left, and you said, well, that would imply that the left side is faulty. I would have automatically assumed it was the right side that was not being applied, that was inoperative, because it's not applying any braking power. And the left side continues to brake, whether it's normal or exaggerated, so that the right side continues forward and the left side tries to stop, while it's trying to stop and the right side's trying to continue, forcing it down as well from momentum. So I don't want to be critical, but I heard that and I'm thinking to myself, have I been thinking about this wrong all my life? Have I been going to the wrong side of my brakes whenever I feel something like that?
Well, it's a matter of friction. What you're suggesting is when he applies the brakes, we don't have any brake pressure to the right. So therefore, the left is the only one that's braking. And so if that was the case, then are you suggesting that if we lose the braking on the right side, that we're going to go right?
No. Okay. We're losing I thought you said, okay, I could have swore I heard you say because it was lunging to the left, we have to assume it was the left side that was faulty.
Yeah.
And I'm going, wait, that would have been the right side.
Okay. Well, when you have one front that's, let's just pretend that the brake pedal is only connected to one front brake. Okay?
Right.
So if you apply the brake and the brake pedal is connected to the right front, it's going to pull right. It's just going to pull right. And same with the left side. So what I said to him was, is he said it was pulling hard left. And I said to him, if the pads are hanging up or if the rotor's wobbling, or the caliper is hung up, or he spit a pad out, that's going to create tremendous friction in the brake system on the left front. And as a result of that, it's going to make it pull hard left. You're right. In some instances, your theology is right. There are times when we're going to have to look at the other side of the car, especially on a vibration. So you've got the driver's side that you think you swear it's the problem, but in reality, it's the passenger side. But you're right sometimes, but 80%, maybe even 90% of the time, when it pulls left or right, we're going to go look at the suspension and the steering and the brakes on the side that it's pulling to. And
yes.
And most of the time, that's it. But you put your point in order, and it made me go back to a long time ago, excuse me, where we had exactly that conversation. Well, I didn't, but I got to see my boss and his lead technician talk about that. And the whole issue had to do with what are we applying brakes and we're slowing the wheel, or whether we're applying brakes here and this one's not doing anything stupid. But we've had times where we've had a hard pull to the right because we've had a suspension collapse or a steering problem in this steering linkage, and everybody goes to the right when really it's on the left. So, yeah, that does happen. Okie dokie.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, David. Thank you for your kind words. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Another day in the life of Mark Salem. We have a guy with a daughter. And the story goes, and I'm working off memory here. The story goes that the Subaru that they have is real old, and it was using some oil, so she drove it from California to Phoenix, and evidently it used a lot of oil on that trip. If my memory serves me right, it used all but a couple of drops in the oil pan. So the guy wants to know whether or not I should put a motor in this or should I just send it to broken Subaru heaven. And one of the things he said to me was, is that I thought he said that it was a head gasket issue. And I said to him, if it was a head gasket issue, then if you pulled the spark plugs, one of the cylinders is going to have water in it, coolant. And if that's the case, then the head gasket matches the fact that it won't crank over. It won't do nothing. You hit the key and it just goes clunk. And I said, there's some sealers that we could try to fix that, but it looks like she overheated it because of the lack of oil. And if the head gasket's truly bad, and that's a big if, then all you'd have to do is pull the spark plugs, get the water out of the oil, put the plugs back in, and it would probably start up. You'd loosen the radiator cap so we didn't build excessive pressure in the cooling system and force water back into that cylinder. So that's part of the problem, part of the plan. So anyway, then somebody takes the oil pan off, and it's got a bunch of metal in it. And so now we have metal in the bottom, and up until this point, it wouldn't start. It wouldn't crank over, and it wouldn't start. And so then he says to me, we towed it to our house. I thought I'd turn it over again. To my surprise, the engine started and ran with a rattle or light knock. I turned it off to make sure I didn't do any damage, and the mechanic looked at it, said there was metal shavings in the pan, but since it started and ran, and there's water in the radiator, it doesn't seem to be the head gaskets. Is it possible it just bent some rods and the repair could be easy? No. The answer to all those questions is no. The real, what I wrote back to him, it's the metal in the pan that is the huge red flag. Forget the head gaskets. Forget the hypothesis about bent push rods. Forget the hypothesis it's got water in it. We got metal shavings in the oil pan. So shavings, pieces of metal, and bits of bearings says the crankshaft and the bearings are wiped out. And we know it came home with a critical amount of oil in it. Engines have suffered an oil starvation problems will oftentimes start and have a slight tick until the engine starts to warm up, and then the tick will turn to a knock. If the oil pan is off, you should be able to look at the bottom end of the engine and one or maybe more of the connections between the rod and the crankshaft will be quite different color than the rest. If one looks discolored or burnt and obviously different than the other three, then that's where the problem lies. So again, we don't want to jump into bent push rods and a head gasket issue when we got an oil pan full of metal, because we have to figure that out first. That's the death knell for that motor. So there's no reason for you to pull the oil pan and find shavings of metal all over the inside of the motor and think that you're going to put coolant and oil in this and drive it back to California. It's just not going to happen. So he was a nice guy, and he was trying to balance about what an engine costs and would that be cheaper than getting our car and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, I think him and I both agreed that this was not a place to put more money into. So he was going to, last time I talked to him, he was going to look for another car for his daughter and help her out. So those are the kinds of things that you should have those conversations with your technician. So do we have any callers, Gil, or are you asleep?
Nope, lines are open.
Okay, lines are wide open, so you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Does it hurt your car any when you're going downhill and you shift it into neutral? The answer is no. Well, if I put it back into drive at 45 miles an hour, it's an automatic. Will that cause damage? No. The only thing is there's no real reason to put it into neutral. Because when you're going downhill on anything that's been made in the last 15 years, it kind of goes into neutral anyway. So there's no holdback on the transmission. You take your foot off the gas, you're going down the hill, you're kind of sailing down the hill. There's no harm, no foul to the engine or the transmission. So there's no reason. Here's the bad news. The bad news is if something happens and you want to downshift, then you have to put it into drive and wait until we hook up hydraulically, and then you can drop it down to 2 or the 1 to help you stop the car. So if you wanted to do that, now most of the time you would use your brakes to accomplish that.
2 minutes.
But it's just not, it's not needed. It's not going to save you any money. It's not going to make you feel better. It's not going to have your car love you more if you throw it into neutral when you're going down the hill from Payson to Rye. It's not going to make any difference. if anything, I want the motor to be up in RPM so that if I have to make an evasive movement to the left or to the right, I don't want my power steering to be at substandard pressure because the engine's idling, therefore the power steering pump is idling. I'd much rather have the RPM a little higher, both for my power brakes and my power steering, so if a hazard becomes in front of me or all of a sudden all of a sudden my wife is screaming bad words, then I need both brakes and power steering at their full capability to be able to pull that off. So those are the kinds of things, and as far as fuel economy is concerned, it makes no difference at all. Not going to make any difference at all. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Again, the list of best car repair shops is on my website, marksalem.com. My email address is mark@salemboysauto.com. You can send me an email, and please leave a phone number, because a lot of times I just don't want to type that much. Plus, a lot of times I have lots of questions for you so that I can focus in on the problem. So it's not a good use of my time to have an email that goes back and forth five times. It's just easier for me to call you and ask you questions like that I need to focus in on, whether it's brakes or whether it's the engine or whether it's a howl from the differential or if the tire has an egg on it and it has a tread separation. All of those kinds of things are things that have specific symptoms that I'm aware of, and then that way I can ask you questions and kind of hone in on that it's more than likely than not than this right here. So 602-508-0960. Well, when it comes to good repair shops, there's one at I-17 and Bell in the northeast corner. And he's called Kurtz Automotive. Kurtz has been around a long time. He's been a friend of mine for a very long time. And there's been more than one time, and this goes for all the shops that I talk about, that I'll send them somebody that has a problem that starts off with, nobody can fix this. I remember specifically a lady, two people told her she needed a $4,000 engine. I sent her to Kurtz because she didn't have any knocking noise. All she had was a light. She had no other symptoms that would suggest that the motor was coming apart from the inside. She drove over to Kurtz and they put an oil pressure switch on it. And I think the diagnostic, the oil pressure switch, and the labor was all $130. So she got her engine fixed for $130. Kurtz is a good guy. He knows right from wrong, and he's not going to sell you an engine when he's really going to do is paint your old one and put a $35 oil pressure switch on it. That's just not what Kurtz does. Let's go to Jesse. Jesse, good morning.
Morning.
How can I help you?
So I heard you were talking a little earlier. I usually hear your show on the weekends when I'm trying to cruise around, but I don't usually call, but I heard you mention to somebody else about oil and the different types of oil and some of the gimmicks that are out there. And my dad used to be a shop mechanic manager for like a TA. And he clued me in a few years back about the lie of changing the oil every 3,000 miles. It can go longer. So we have a habit of changing ours every 5. Maybe that's a little bit too quick, depending on, I'm sure it's how many miles you drive. And, the question I had, though, was with these newer cars, like I have a 2017 Chrysler 300, it has a gauge on it, or it has kind of like a mechanical or a computerized timer, and it tells you your oil life. If the oil life is going by that, sorry, I guess I should wind back to say, does that have a time? Is there a set number of hours or mileage that's tuned into? Or does it just go by mileage? And if that's the case, and I don't need to change my oil that fast, how do I get past that thing where it says, hey, you need to change your oil now?
Okay, two questions. First of all, it's not on mileage and it's not on time. It's on 5 to 10 different parameters. How many times has this car been reached operating temperature, in your case 220, and how many times has it cooled down? Those are called heat cycles. When it's driven, what's the average speed? Is it 32 miles an hour because Grandma Moses is driving it? Or is it 65 to 80 miles an hour because Jesse's driving it? So it has a lot to do with all kinds of parameters. So now I'm going to change your question. Mark, do you have an oil change monitoring system on your truck? I do. Do you pay attention to it? No. Well, when do you change your oil? When it's due on mileage. Okay, What do you do then? Well, I change the oil, and then I reset that stupid monitor, because you turn the key on and you step on the – now, this is just my truck. It's different on every kind. Turn the key on, step on the throttle three times all the way to the floor, and it resets the light. So those are the kinds of silly stuff. Let me be more specific. A conventional oil, which more than likely is what your father dealt with a long time ago, a conventional oil is $3,000 to $5,000. The oil's a lot better than it was in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. So we have a conventional, 3,000 to 5,000 intervals. Then we have a blended oil, a semi-synthetic. They're interchangeable, but nobody really knows if it's a 70-30 or if it's a 50-50 or if it's a 95-5. So a blended oil goes from 5,000 to 7,500. And then a full synthetic goes from 7,500, depending on which car you got, to 15,000. Mercedes is 15,000. Mark does 10. So I change my oil twice a year, and I try to do it the first of summer and the first of winter. So I go through the summer with fresh oil, and I change it twice, but I'm also driving 20, 22, 25,000 miles a year. So I'm just doing it that way on my mom's or my wife's car. Yeah, she kind of is my mom sometimes. My wife's car, all of our fleet cars, my kids do it. We do it, and our customers. So if you've got an oil leaker and you're using conventional, you're coming in, we're going to send you a card every 3,000 miles. But if you've got a synthetic and you only drive 8,000 miles a year, then it's a tough call. Do I call you in because you got 12 months on that oil, or do I let you go another year? That's a tough call. That's the worst call we have to make. Then you got a synthetic oil in a brand new Honda, and the lady goes to church every Sunday, and she puts 1,000 miles a year on her car. So
right.
I'm going to take her back to a semi-synthetic, and I'm going to use a semi-synthetic on her, and I'm still going to call her in once a year for an oil change. So not everybody does what I do, but I can tell you this much. A third to 40% of our industry follows these parameters. Now, some of the people in our industry take advantage of these parameters. And so they'll reconstruct the whole idea and condemn you for not bringing it in when you should have, and you can't drive this car once the light comes on, and none of that's true. None of that's true. So
right.
It's really a matter of there's three kinds of oil, and they all determine the quality is different between conventional, semi-synthetic, and synthetic. The price is different, and the protection is different. Here's another example. Excuse me. The pour point of oil is, in simplistic manner, when does it pour out of the can? At what temperature does it still pour out of the can, as opposed to being solid wax? So a conventional oil will not pour out of the can at about 15 below zero. A semi-synthetic, maybe you'll do 30, pour out of the can at 30 below zero. Of course, these are morning temperatures in Phoenix. Then you got 60 below. A synthetic will still pour out of the can at 60 below zero. I suggest to you that I wouldn't use a synthetic for that reason in Arizona. Let's go to the top end. A conventional oil turns to a tar. It's called oxidation. So it's going to be a tar somewhere around 300 degrees. A semi-synthetic, somewhere close to 350, 400. And a full synthetic won't turn to a tar until 500 degrees. So now the question from Jesse to Mark is, okay, the oil will withstand 500 degrees, but when does the engine go to heaven?
And the engine goes right.
At 280, 300. It's cooked. So we have this parameters that really have nothing to do with nothing except for Minnesota and maybe the I-10 corridor for heat. So it's just really a matter of, and the reason why we went to synthetics in a big way in the last two or three years, because fuel economy. The car clearly will get better fuel economy and last longer when it has a 0-20 in it. So a 0-20 says this: it flows like a 0 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. And that makes old guys real nervous, because it's called the pillow effect. It's us thinking that oil is a big pillow. And so the thicker the oil, the engine just loves that, and it lubricates. That's not true. If we get oil in and out of that bearing and carry the heat out, and it happens in the blink of an eye, we're in good shape. But if the oil comes in and it comes through that bearing and comes out with the heat, and it takes it a week to there, then you know that the oil's going in and getting hot and staying in there too long. So those are all the big parameters. But you can work on either way. You can set a mileage and an interval and live with that, or you can go buy the maintenance light. It's okay. Both of them are okay, but just know that that's a pretty good. Now, I want to tell you, too, when I do my oil change, let's say at 12, the monitor may be 1,000 to 2,000 miles either way, and I'm okay with that. So it's just a matter of how I drive. Now, I drive pacing to Phoenix a lot, and I usually sit on the passenger side and drink my beer, and my wife's doing like 90. And so the heat cycles are not a big deal. and all the other, and of course, I'm teasing you. But it's how it's driven and who's driving it and all that other kind of stuff. So you can do it either way, but just tailor it to intervals. So if you only drive 8,000 miles a year or 6,000 miles a year, then use a blend. Okay?
All about that
Alrighty, everybody. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repair is at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom, the owner, since 1983. He's a good guy. He knows right from wrong. He's been around the block a couple of times. He's got some really good technicians. And the best part about it is he's been there a long time, and he's going to be there a lot more time. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, then you don't have a garage, then Action Auto Repair's on the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. And we've got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Tony.
Tony, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm back again.
Okay.
I just had something cross my mind. On PVC valve deal.
Okay.
Can they... If they start malfunctioning or getting plugged up, can they cause oil consumption?
No. No. Let me explain. PCV stands for positive crankcase ventilator. Okay?
Right.
Now, I want to ask you a question. Let's pretend you have a V8, and I know you have a 5.3 liter. That's what you had the last time you called?
Right.
Okay. If we had a hole in the valve cover on the passenger side, and we had a hole in the valve or on the driver's side, and we hooked a vacuum to the driver's side, the engine's airtight. So if I put a vacuum on the valve cover hole on the driver's side, as I suck the fumes out of the engine, the clean air is going to go into the engine on the passenger side. Does that make sense? We're going to suck air in, and we're going to carry it air out. So that's what a PCV valve does. It eliminates internal pressure, and it takes the fumes from inside the engine and sends them through the engine again. So as we end up with this fumes inside the engine that has a lot of fuel in it, then we can send that stuff to the engine to be burned again. So PCV valves, unless the engine's real full of oil and the valve covers are full, then the PCV valve has nothing to do with sucking oil out of the engine.
Okay. Well, mine goes down gradually. I had a little bit of oil between changes, so I was just curious. It doesn't smoke, it doesn't leak, but it just crossed my mind. I heard that those PVCs get plugged up and could cause the wrong vacuum and suck oil through, and I was just curious about
it. Well, let me just touch on what you said. If the PCV valve plugs up with carbon, then the vacuum cleaner's gone. So it isn't going to suck air, it isn't going to suck fumes, and it's not going to suck soda pop or vodka. It's not going to suck anything. So what's going to happen is we're going to have a little bit of pressure in the engine, maybe 1 pound, that we didn't have before. And that's not going to cause anything. Let me also, you know, kind of feel, when your oil, you have a full and an add mark, where is it on the dipstick that the oil level gets when you add oil back to it?
When there's a complete oil change with a filter, it's always almost a quarter of an inch above the full.
Okay. So that's
it. It holds six quarts.
Are you sure your 5.3 holds six?
No.
Okay. Let me make a suggestion. Let me make a suggestion to you. we want the oil to be on the full mark when we're done with an oil change. So next time whoever does the oil, you just tell them, I want you to put 5 quarts in, and I want you to start it up, let it run for 60 seconds, and then we're going to shut it off, and we're going to let it sit for a minute, and then we're going to check the oil, and I want to make sure the oil is right at the full mark. Here's what happens. If you put that other quart in there, it's going to suck that oil into the engine, go out the tailpipe, because you've overfilled the engine. And that's not going to cause the engine to fail, but it's not a good idea to do that on a regular basis. I don't want you to add any oil till it gets at the add mark or below the add mark. So there's a lot of people that will, the level will get halfway between the full and the add, and they'll add a quart. No, that's not what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to add a quart till it touches the add mark or a tad below
down,
it.
Okay. Down the bottom line there, on the bottom line on the dipstick.
Yeah, there's hatch marks between the add and the full, so you can see it a little bit better. But you're right. Don't add any oil until it's touching the bottom line, which is called the add mark, or it's a tad below that. Then you add a quart.
1 minute.
Because the difference between the add mark and the full mark is 1 quart on virtually every car in the world. Okay?
Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you again. I might call you again next week.
It's okay, Tony. It's okay. It's all right.
All right.
All righty. Yeah, PCV valve doesn't suck any oil. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have any car questions, then this is give and take. Your make and model, you give me that, and then tell me what the symptoms are. What's it doing? Like Tony said, does the PCV valve suck oil out of the engine? And we can discuss that. And we talk about both sides of it. If it does suck oil, how does that happen? And when it doesn't suck oil, how does that happen? And when it's bad, what's ugly? And when it's good, what's it doing right? That's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I just have something I want to share with you. And this is kind of crazy, but it's okay. And Diane, you stay right there because I'm going to be with you in probably 90 seconds. I went to Walmart the other day, believe it or not, and I was shopping, believe it or not. I wanted some bottled water, so I went over to the bottled water section, and they had this Nestle Splash Wild Berry in a plastic bottle. So I bought a six-pack, and I brought it home. My wife says, oh, there you go again, buying something that's full of sugar and blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, you're wrong, like you always are, because let me read it to you. This is the label. In the serving, it has no calories, no fat. It has 1% of your daily values in sodium. It has no carbs, and it has no protein. So basically, it's got a tad of sugar. But this stuff tastes so good that I went back and bought 5 cases, and I put them in the barn. So my wife doesn't know I have them because I have a refrigerator in the barn. And this is what I'm going to kind of, it's water, but it's just flavored water. So you got nothing to lose. If you don't like it, I'll pay you for the six-pack that you bought. But anyway, it's Nestle's Splash, and they have a bunch of different flavors, but I got the wild berry, and it was pretty good. So I just pass that on to you because, as an old guy, I had to look up DV, which is daily value. It has 1% of your daily value sodium that you're supposed to, you know, have in your body on a daily basis. So I don't care about that. Diane, how can I help you today?
Yes, I have a 2003 Chevy Silverado with the Duramax engine.
Okay.
And it's got the Allison transmission. And when I go to put it in gear, when I go to start, it's like it sometimes kind of doesn't want to move. And when it gets going, it's okay. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there.
Okay. How many miles do you have on the truck?
Oh, it's just about broke in. I think I have about 350.
350,000?
Uh-huh.
I know you're teasing me. I know your comment about it's just broken in. It is kind of cute in this circumstance. Have you put 350,000 miles on this?
It had 20,000 when I got it.
That doesn't count. That doesn't count. 350. I'm using my calculator right now. If you just give me a minute here. Divided by 25,000. Just a minute. You've been around the world 14 times. The girth of the Earth to the equator is 24,844 miles. If you'll let me divide your 350 by 15,000 or by 25,000 miles, you've been around the world at the equator 15 times, 14 times.
Wow.
So people, it's, and the reason I bring that up is not to make anybody mad, but we have to put the mileage in perspective. This truck doesn't owe you anything. It's giving you great service. But let me answer your question. The first thing I want you to do, let me ask you this. Does it make any difference? This, it's called the delay. Okay. I put it in drive and there's a delay before it actually jumps into gear. Does it make
any,
does it make any difference cold or hot? Does it do it cold, but it doesn't do it hot?
Seems to do it both ways.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Like I'm sitting in it now, it's idling, and then when I, it just kind of eases off. But it did the same thing when I started it up this morning.
Okay. Good. Good. The reason why I ask you that is because if it has hard internal seals, it'll have a delayed engagement cold, but it typically will go away when it's hot. And under those conditions, then we're going to put some kind of a transmission additive in it that rejuvenates the seals or causes the rubber seals to soften a little bit or whatever marketing thing that they have. But in your particular case, the first thing I think you should do is have someone check the fluid level on it. Now, have you had the filters changed and the fluid changed on your Allison?
I believe so, but I don't remember when.
Okay. That's kind of an important thing. Let me tell you this. The Allison transmission is the best transmission out there in a diesel truck. Even though I drive a Dodge, there's nothing as good as that Allison. That Allison is just a strong, long-living transmission. And you, you know, all you have to do is service it every once in a while. But that's what I do. Check the fluid level to make sure that it's full. Make sure that you've got all your oil changes and filters. Now, that has a spin-on filter, so it's not like it's a big job to replace the filter. It's just kind of like it's like your engine. You spin one off, spin it on. But what part of town do you live in?
I'm north, and I'm actually I don't know if I'm going to move now. I left it in gear, got the brake on, and then I'm picking up my friend at Walmart.
Okay, all right. Well, he's probably buying that Wildberry Nestle's water I was talking about.
That I'm going to have to do it next time. But yes, I'm going to.
Okay, so
and I'm sitting here and it's just spinning, and I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, this is you're in drive, right? You're in drive.
Yeah, I'm putting.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Now
I had to put it back in the park and back into drive again, and now I'm moving.
Okay. Okay.
Slowly.
At the appropriate time when you're in, when you're kind of in neutral, even though your shifter is in drive, when no one's within a mile in front of the truck, I just want you to give it a little bit of gas, kind of a run, run, and see if it moves forward. I want you just to bring up the RPMs of the engine a little bit. Please don't do it when there's a car in front of you because I don't want the truck lurching forward. So
Thank you.
Of course, it's your ex-husband and you don't like him, then you can lurch forward on him. I don't care. But the idea is that will help. What part of town do you live in? Do you have a garage that you like and trust?
I go to a mechanic, but he's not the best on diesels. He does better on my car.
Okay.
Sometimes
okay.
he refers me to diesels. I'm in North Phoenix by 19th Avenue, Happy Valley.
Okay. You know, I'd probably stop by Strictly Diesel and ask him to just check your transmission fluid. I'm quite sure Nate would do that for you for a minimum charge, or he'd just do it for free. And so he's at, and let me look him up, so I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. So I think that's kind of in your area.
It's a mile away. Mm-hmm.
Okay, then just go to Nate, and this is what you say. Are you ready? You don't go there on Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons. But you just pull in and you park out front and you go in and you say, you know, can I talk to Nate? And when Nate comes out, you say, Mark Salem says that you don't know which end of the car is the front and the back, but I was wondering if you could check the transmission fluid in my Allison. Now, Nate, I want to tell you, Nate's like 10 feet tall. He's got hands like tennis rackets. And I'm afraid of Nate because if he gets mad, he's really going to beat me up bad. He's the nicest person in the whole wide world. So basically, and you're going to use my name not because I'm going to make a dime on anything you have. I don't. Mm-hmm. If he offered me a bird dog fee, I'd tell him to donate it to his church. I don't do that. But it just puts them on notice that you're a referral from me. And and I'm not going to refer a problem child to them. I'm going to refer someone who needs help. And so they can be your hero. Mm-hmm. But go see Nate.
Okay.
All righty.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Diane. TOT Strictly Diesel. And that way I can keep track in case he calls me. I say, was she nice to you? And he goes, no. And I say, well, I didn't send her to you. sometimes I'm beyond ornery. There is other shops in the area, and I'll tell you about one shop that I like a lot, and that's Action Auto Repair. And he's been around since 1983, has master technicians. And if you want to talk about Minnesota and Wisconsin and snowmobiling in snow that's 10 feet deep, then go over and sit in his lobby. Make sure Tom's there, and you can talk snowmobiles all day long. He'll talk to you about that. So anyway, when it comes to your car, it's important to know that your car's not going to love you if you do more than the manual says. It's not going to love you. I promise. If your transmission, if God wants your transmission to fail at 125,000 miles, you can change the fluid on that transmission every day for 125,000 miles, and it's still not going to make a bit of difference. The transmission is going to fail at 125. It is true that you can cause things to prematurely fail by abusing the vehicle, but most of the people I'm talking to aren't going to have that problem, unless, of course, they're hunting and they get stuck and they might abuse the drivetrain getting out of the big mud hole they're at, but that's what four-wheel drive is all about. It just really has a lot to do with just common sense. Don't let anybody talk to you about changing from what the owner's manual says, because almost always, not almost always, 99% of the time, the owner's manual's wrong, and my idea is better, and my idea butters my bread sooner and more often than the manual. So the manual says change your transmission fluid 100,000 miles, but really and truly, Diane, you have to change it. We live in Phoenix. It's hot here. So you have to do it. Diane, I'm thinking 50 to 65,000 miles. That's really self-serving. The fact of the matter is that truck doesn't know when it's built where it's going. California, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Florida, Arizona, Texas, New York, Maine. It doesn't know. That truck's for built for all 50 states. So the owner's manual is the maintenance required and the maintenance you should do based on the people that made the truck. So they understand that some people are going to drive a truck 3,000 miles a year and some are going to do 30,000 miles a year, 50,000 miles a year. They understand that. But the big picture is here, this oil change on your transmission is best for all of you. So don't let anybody bring you up to this idea that your manual isn't written for Arizona. When they say that, nothing wads up my underwear worse than hearing that. Then you say to them politely, listen, I didn't know that. Can I get your business card real quick? And then get a business card from me. Say, look, I want you to order me an Arizona owner's manual. Okay, I've never seen one before, but I need to have one because you said that manual is written for Arizona. So here's my name and phone number. Give me a call when the manual comes in. The problem with that is there's no such thing as a manual. The manual's written for all 50 states and Canada, for that matter, except it's in kilometers instead of miles. I promise you, you don't have to speed up them. And there is nothing in the newer model cars that would suggest that you have to change the way, whether you're 60 below in North Dakota or whether you're 120 degrees in Phoenix. The truck can handle both of those under the prescribed maintenance stopping points that's in your owner's manual. Our industry right now is in flux because of the COVID and because a lot of us, I mean, my business was down 48%. We're almost back to normal, but down 48% for about 2.5 months. There's a lot of shops that furloughed some people. Our parts department furloughed my three best buddies, which didn't do very well for me, so I'm going to move my business somewhere else because I don't trust them now. The idea is that our industry has a bad habit of making up things about your car so that we can butter our own bread and we can take money out of your pocket or your purse and put it in ours. I'll tell you how bad that gets. There are people out there, their whole focus, people that own repair shops, their whole focus is getting you to okay a whole lot of work. I'll give you an example. Shop owner A calls me the other day and says, I'm going to tell you something you're never going to believe.
2 minutes.
And I said, I can tell you right now, I've heard it before. So go ahead. So Greg says, another shop owner took my top tech away, and he gave him a $50,000 signing bonus and guaranteed him $100,000 a year. And I said, did you counter him? Because those numbers are just silly, stupid. And he goes, no, what do you think about that? And I said, I've never done that. I've never had a signing bonus. I said, and there's a couple of my technicians that are pretty close to $100,000 a year, but these guys have been in the business. Eddie's been in the business for 32 years. He's a master tech. He can fix anything except the crack of dawn and a broken heart. So all of a sudden, we've got shop owners. Now, so let me tell you, there's no question in my mind. There's no one's going to convince me otherwise. The only way you're going to pay for a $100,000 technician and guaranteed salary and give him a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 signing bonus is to increase your business by a third or half. And you're going to do that by suggesting to the people, your customers, that they really need to have this now. And some of the magazines that we get, we actually get parameters. They say, well, you should be able to talk them into five times the bill they came in for. So if they came in for a synthetic oil change at $120, you ought to be able to sell them $600 worth of maintenance, $600 worth of fluid changes, $600 worth of work that they need. Forget what the manual says. This is work that you need. Now, sometimes the manual doesn't say that your tie rod ends go bad or your rear tranny mount goes bad. Those aren't in the manual under maintenance. So if you have a symptom and they're going to do a repair, you know, one and one equals two. My email is mark@marksalem.com. You can always send me an email and I'll help you out. But leave your phone number there so I can call you back on my blocked line. Mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. Please don't drink and drive. And if somebody does something nice for you, honk your horn and say thank you with your hand.